Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you, sir?
Well, doing great. Happy to be here. Excited. Shout out to all you dunkers. Thank you for, again, embracing your bounce. I am fatigued. This whole daylight savings time thing.
Hour got you, huh?
Really getting your boy. It was great yesterday. It was phenomenal.
And now it's getting...
I did the thing where I didn't change my clocks for like 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So I could do the old man, hey, look, it's like 9 o'clock, but it's not.
Let's see.
And that sunset, my knee started.
That's kind of tough. That's kind of tough. That just kind of comes with the age, huh?
Just you wait, pal.
I got a few more years in the chamber before I get there. We'll see how that goes. There's a lot going on in the league. Since we last potted on Thursday night, a lot of stuff, a lot of injury stuff, a lot of investigating going on, apparently. Let's start with the not so fun stuff. The Portland Trail Blazers are in headlines again as their general manager, Neil O'Shea, is now being investigated. The organization as a whole is being investigated because of a, let's just say, a less than ideal workplace environment. This is disappointing, first and foremost, if these allegations are true. Also, shout out to Dan Dickow, whose name I have not heard in literal years, coming out of nowhere and bringing some accounts to the table. Steve, what were your thoughts when this story first dropped late on Friday?
First off, shout out to Dan Dickow, Portland legend. It was very strange. All of this is strange because I watched the Blazers-Pacers game, or at least most of it, and then woke up to that happening. Mm-hmm. But usually when that drops, there's like news attached to it, if that makes sense. Not that that wasn't news enough, but there's usually something that goes with it. And it was very quiet and blank and like, hey, we're doing an investigation. That was it. It's still been kind of quiet if you think about it, outside of Dan Dickow coming off the top rope, which should tell you everything. Mm-hmm. The thing that got me was non-player personnel. So for non-player personnel to do this says something, because you know who the most replaceable person is?
Non-player personnel, I would assume.
Non-player personnel. I mean, every year I was in the video room, I was reminded I was an Atwell employee.
Sheesh.
And I'm being honest, and I had what felt like one of the most important jobs, but also one of the most replaceable jobs, which makes a really fun mental health deal as you're young and trying to thrive and feeling like you're living your dream and chasing it, and also knowing that you could just not exist at any point in time.
Just a little bit of stress added to that. No biggie.
So it's a weird deal. You know, I don't even feel comfortable because I want to widen it past Neil O'Shea. Now, hopefully, I mean, they're continuing to investigate, right? Mm-hmm. So clearly, I guess it's safe to say there's some smoke. If there's not fire, if they're looking to interview more people and ask questions, I don't know how that ends up, but there's a element in sports of a little bit of toxicity that rarely gets talked about unless it blows up in a big way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, it's tough for me to sometimes even talk about these types of things because, you know, when you worked in the league and then you didn't, it comes off like sour grapes, just natural, which it's not. I'm very thankful to have achieved my dream and have worked in the league, and salute to that. But at the same time, this is stuff that never really gets talked about, you know? Mm-hmm. Just think about the people who work in the league, that's either their dream job or it's your dream job, right? So if you talk about your workplace struggles and then I come in with, yo, I got yelled at because I didn't bring the ball at the right time. It's different.
Yeah.
No one really wants to hear about it. So you're kind of like, I don't want to say on an island. You know, it's a blessed island, but at the same time, it's very like, it's a different type of workplace, different type of environment. There's a lot of power, control, ego. people like to work to get there and like to work to get to the top and then do whatever it takes to maintain and stay there. You know, that's just kind of how it goes. And hopefully things improve and hopefully people are able to enjoy what they want to do as opposed to eggshells.
I mean, that's in an ideal world, that's how it's supposed to work. Like, obviously, work. I mean, I haven't worked for an NBA team, but I would imagine like that is a highly competitive, moderate to high stress ordeal. So you hope that there will be some kind of buffers in terms of the personalities that you work with that makes that a little bit more enjoyable, a little bit more manageable to deal with outside of just the natural stressors of the job. But, you know, if there is that level of toxicity there, that just makes things a lot tougher for everyone. So I'm curious to see where this one goes. I'm also curious to see how this affects, I guess, the undercurrent of the Damian Lillard thing, if that matters at all in this case, and what kind of ear he has to this situation, if he has one there. I think it just feels like Portland's been in flux for the entirety of like 6 or 7 months now.
It's been weird times. It's been very weird times. And obviously the wrong person got mad. It feels like this, someone found something out that it struck the wrong chord. So it's a weird deal, man. It's a weird deal.
A weird deal indeed.
Man, you know what? Dan Dickow told the story, right? Where he was trying to figure out if he still had a job. Mm-hmm. And then couldn't get the answers, so just tried to stay with the team in a different role. And then got cussed out. That triggered me, man. That reminded me of one time, one off season. They told me, hey, this is what you made last year. This is what you're making this year. You got 30 minutes.
Jeez.
And I'm laughing because I went to therapy. It's fine. But just little things like that. Just little things like it's, I go on. Let's talk about Ben Simmons.
Yes, let's move off of weirdness between an organization. Let's move to the Ben Simmons situation in Philadelphia. There's just a lot going on in Philadelphia, period. We can just talk Philly right now. Joel Embiid is now in health and safety protocols. And according to Doc Rivers, he's positive for COVID and is not doing very well. The same has been said about Tobias Harris, who also has COVID and apparently is not doing very well. And a potential buffer to missing two of your four best offensive players. Steph Curry's been incredible this year. One of those buffers would be Ben Simmons in a normal circumstance. However, Ben Simmons has not played for very obvious reasons. He has the trade demand, does not want to be in Philadelphia. Philadelphia doesn't look to want to move him unless they get a great offer. Those great offers are not there right now. What's bothering me about all of this is the mental health aspect of it and kind of how it's being discussed overall, I think is the thing that's bothering me the most. Because right now, Ben Simmons has reportedly told the Sixers that he is not mentally prepared to play. And that has both put Philadelphia in an odd spot and also has just opened up a can of worms about this entire discourse around like mental health and especially how it pertains to athletes. And so with Ben Simmons in Philadelphia in particular, it's okay, Ben, if this is how you're feeling, if this is what you're dealing with, we are going to trust that you are telling us this in good faith, that you are seeking the help that you need. Just keep us in the loop. And, you know, according to the article we saw from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN today, it's Ben Simmons has done that to a degree. He has provided names of the mental health specialists that he's working with aside away from the team. And it also seems like Philadelphia wants a little bit more than that. They want more of the particulars of the treatment that he's getting, like what kind of timeline he wants, which, again, makes sense because they want to know if their max player is going to be available at any point soon. And that becomes even more dire now with Joel Embiid and Tobias Harris being out. But, like, I just get uncomfortable when it turns into, like, is Ben Simmons faking it? Or can Ben Simmons even have anxiety around the situation or anything because of his stature in the league or the money he makes? Or like, I won't pretend to have the perfect answer on how to discuss this portion of it, but I feel like it's being talked about the wrong way. At least that's been my experience seeing the discourse online. And I understand that that's very anecdotal, so I don't want to say like that is just how the conversation is going. But from what I've seen, like I'm feeling very uncomfortable about where this is going and where it's been heading for like the last month or so.
Yeah, I've tried to avoid it as much as possible. It's just an unfortunate situation in the sense that now his mental health could become in question, which isn't a fair thing to do. But with athletes, it tends to happen more than it should. We remove the humanity because of the titles and the paycheck and because of the norms of society. And it's tough. You know, I felt for Ben Simmons. I understood why he didn't go back. If he felt like, hey, I'm not ready to be there, they don't want me there, all that good stuff, it made sense. My only time I was disappointed was when he did go back and then he left. I was like, you can't. I mean, if you're going to go back, you got to go back.
Right.
But hey, he clearly wasn't mentally ready to play. Let them know, hey, I'm not mentally ready. And that's where we're at, which is where we were always at. And now it becomes a deal where, you know, picking a therapist, man, that's a really deeply personal decision. So I get from Philadelphia's standpoint, they want to trust and understand that it's happening. But there's such distrust in the situation that now it's like, hey, no, you got to talk to our guy. Like, it's just, it's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate. It's really weird to say out loud, like the Sixers didn't feel like they knew what was going on or didn't trust that it was happening. So now we need to check in on that. You know, like
with the threat of fines resuming, if that,
like if that's part of your agreement, part of your deal, hey, we understand. I get it in my head, but also saying it out loud feels strange.
Yeah.
It just feels like a massive lack of communication. But like at the end of the day, hopefully he can find a way to look in the mirror and enjoy his life and enjoy what he's doing and see what's missing and move forward, which is what majority of us are doing. He's just doing it in a very public platform.
Mm-hmm.
And now it becomes the Sixers are doing what they have to do, but at the same time, it's touchy, it's sensitive.
It's very touchy and sensitive. Like, there's such a line to walk between, for the Philadelphia organization at least, it's such a line to walk between, one, just figuring out what's going on with him, but also not crossing the line as in, like, you know, invading his privacy or making him feel even more uncomfortable. Because, like, at the end of the day, only Ben Simmons knows how dire the mental health issue is for him. And like, that's not something that you can dictate on either front. And I understand why one on the outside may be cynical just because of how, you know, this summer went in terms of the communication, but it's, I don't know. Like, that's just not something you can be wrong about. From the organization standpoint, if you're just discussing it overall, I just don't feel comfortable being firm either way. And I especially don't feel firm making the he's found a loophole in the CBA argument that's kind of floating out there now. Like, I just can't get there. And maybe that's naive of me. Maybe that's shooting him too much bail. I mean, I hope not, obviously. But like, I just really struggle with that argument being made, with as complex as mental health can be.
That delves into a world that I don't necessarily enjoy. You know, if that's what he did, that's what he did. But all the moves beforehand didn't necessarily work out. So I don't know, man. I don't know. And Philadelphia not only has to, as you said, balance those things, they also have to enforce rules and discipline to continue to keep their team in order, which is crazy that we're having to talk about this instead of them being 8-3.
Mm-hmm.
It's it's clearly a relationship that is headed towards divorce, but no one knows how to get there.
So, yeah, it's just tough. Like, this is just such a weird situation that I hope ends for everyone's sake at this point. Because regardless of when Ben Simmons feels better, he does not need to be a Sixer. And it's very clear that with the measures that the Sixers have taken to try to get this thing sorted, and especially now that you're adding this mental health aspect into it, like, it's very clear that they don't really want him back either. They just don't want to lose the deal, which I get that from Daryl Morey's side. But, like, also, Phil, to your point, like, Philadelphia has gotten off to a hot start this year and has done so without Ben Simmons. Like, he's their second best player when healthy and right. So I just kind of want this resolved. Like, I don't want to see more articles about this. I don't want to hear more talking points about this. Like, I want Ben Simmons to be okay. I would like for both parties to move forward, turn the page. Like, let's get Ben on a different team. Let's get some firepower for the Sixers team that has performed well to start the year. Let's just get this over with at a certain point. And on that front, there was a report that floated out there about the Sixers receiving call from the Celtics, having some conversations. Not,
oh, wait a minute. Where are we going with this?
You
started me out with these two stories, and you're about to hit me with the trade, aren't you?
It's all connected. Ben Simmons was linked to the Boston Celtics. And more specifically, linked to Jaylen Brown as a potential piece of a deal. One, I got yelled at on Twitter today, so that was fun.
That's a day that ends in Y.
You know what? This is very true. But, like, one, that's it's completely random. Like, that's not something I just never thought of Boston as a serious suitor for Ben Simmons. Like, I just didn't think that would be, those would be the two teams that would talk to each other, much less that kind of swap. And now, even with this, like, Jaylen Brown is also out now with a hamstring injury. Hamstring strain, I believe, is what it is. Supposed to be out for the next week or two as he recovers from that. Not that that would seriously affect any trade, but, you know, Boston's had a fun start to the year. Let's put it that way. Missing Jaylen Brown, obviously, there is. But as for the Simmons-Jaylen Brown thing, I tweeted, I like it for both sides, and immediately got yelled at. And so as I kind of thought it through, I'm just like, one, it wouldn't be a straight-up swap. Like, there would have to be more pieces added to kind of balance this thing out. Because if you're Boston receiving Ben Simmons, regardless of what else you may want from Philadelphia, if you're getting Ben Simmons, like, you can't have Ben Simmons and also Marcus Smart on the floor together. And then also maybe Robert Williams. So, like, there would have to be some shuffling beyond getting Ben Simmons. But just looking at what Boston needs offensively, like, I do think Dennis Schroeder seems to be their only, like, rim pressure guy that matters. Because Marcus Smart will get to the rim, but then the decision maker kind of gets a little haywire. Jason Tatum is still trying to figure things out as a downhill threat, at least consistently. I do think Ben Simmons can provide some of that rim pressure, create some easier looks. He could juice their transition attack, in which they don't really have guys that jumpstart transition opportunities consistently.
Dennis Schroeder slander?
Schroeder, like, he can't be your own. I don't want Schroeder to be your best guy, and he surely can't be your only guy on top of that. This is not Schroeder slander. Schroeder has filled his role. As someone that was just in Miami to watch Heat Celtics and to watch Dennis Schroeder just shred Miami's on-ball defenders off the dribble, like, he's done his job as the get-to-the-rim guy. The issue is that it's Schroeder and then question mark, question mark, question mark. So, like, I see the fit there with Ben as a guy that can juice the transition attack, a guy that can get to the rim and send my transition, a guy that can get to the rim honestly, in the half court. The playoffs are a different question, which that's probably why if you're on Boston side, you're like, okay, we're going to need Ben Simmons and something. Or some things if we're moving Jaylen Brown, which I get. But, like, I do think, even with the spacing issues that Philadelphia's had throughout Ben Simmons' tenure and with his limitations, there's a reason why, when healthy, like, he's always among the league leaders in, like, assist on three-pointers. He's a guy that gets to the rim consistently. He draws attention in that way. He creates open looks. So, like, I think he can help Boston in that regard. And then defensively, I don't really need to make the case on why Ben Simmons would be a help for a Boston team that is switching, not just a lot, they're switching at a higher rate than anyone in the league at this point. So, like, he's a natural fit there. Like, I don't think, again, like, I think it would depend on what else would need to be added. Maybe it's Simmons and a Maxey, or maybe it's Simmons and a Seth Curry, in which I don't know if Philly want to do that. But I can see where Ben Simmons would make sense in Boston. Am I completely out of my mind?
I think Ben Simmons would help Boston. I think Boston would probably be more intrigued to add him to Jaylen and Tatum more than trade Jaylen for him. I kind of feel like that's more Boston be like, hey, what's up with Ben? And feeling be like, you know what the price is. And Boston be like, okay, bye. So you think Philly would definitely be the winner in that trade?
I think, like, probably, like, they do need another wing creator. And, like, the shooting you get from Jaylen Brown, like, that's an obvious fit there. I would probably dub Philly as the winner there. But, like, I don't think that would be a situation where, like, Philly wins the deal and we're looking at Boston like, what the heck are you thinking?
Another topic where you align with Kendrick Perkins. Carry the hell on.
I do not like this now reoccurring bit at all. I'm going to be completely honest with you.
I look at the man in the mirror.
I need to, like, shave my beard and everything. This is awful.
No, I think Ben Simmons could give Boston some juice. I think defensively, if him and Marcus Smart were together, that would be fun. I think obviously you'd have to have the right lineup structures, and how much on-ball reps would he get type deal would be interesting, but it'd be good. I don't think I would do it for Jaylen Brown, but it'd be fun.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's move on to the teams that impressed. And that was a positive fair enough for what it's worth. I just wanted to get out in front of that one before I got hit with some slander. I knew where that was going. Steve, who's caught your eye over the past week?
The dunkers, no. It's all right. I'm going with the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah.
What do you know? Pascal Siakam came back, and they did the thing. And they started him and OG and Scotty Barnes, and that's fun. I, for one, forgot how much Canada and Toronto loved the Raptors. And so watching them play at home has been fun because that crowd is, like, super juiced. And this team is playing very hard. And it looks like Nick Nurse has found the people he wants to play, where he's got the length, he's got the activity, he's got the juice, and then that's helping them create on the other end. Now, hasn't been as consistent as it needs to be. I still have questions about them in the half court, but this team is fun. Like, Gary Trent Jr. is really playing defense. Like, I think him and Fred VanVleet were number one and number two in deflections in the league. And I think Gary Trent Jr. is still the tops in steals, which sounds insane.
It's just the most random thing.
This man is working. Fred VanVleet has been playing really well, hitting shots. Scotty Barnes, we've talked about what he's done. And OG taking a leap, you know, where I put a clip out and someone's like, oh, it looks like Kawhi. And I'm like, you know what? Like, kind of get it. So that's been fun. The bench unit they've had, they've gotten some production from a lot of guys. What's my man's name?
Which one are we talking about?
The tall point guard.
Delano Banton.
Yes. Joy watching him play. This man just makes plays out there. him and Svi. You got Svi out there doing things every now and then.
The agenda lives.
Nah, Nick Nurse has found his guys, and they're going to compete. That's the one thing every night in, night out. They're going to compete. So I want to see if OG can keep making this leap, Scotty Barnes keep making this leap, if Freddie can continue to reactivate his game the way he has this year. And they should be fun.
How have you felt about Precious Achiuwa? Because this seems to be a real, like, it. I don't want to call Precious polarizing, because I don't know if he has the status to be dubbed as, like, polarizing. But, like, what he's been very hot and cold.
I think just inconsistent, honestly. This is a great opportunity for him. His skill set matches with what Toronto generally likes. He can do multiple things in theory. He's got activity. He can rebound. I just, for me, you would want to see him grab this opportunity a little bit more, you know, and not have the 2-for-9 games, or not have the games where you're not sure, is he locked in defensively? Like, grab this consistent role. This is your chance. Make it count. You know, or else it's going to be like Kim Birch, or they're just going to go small. So you got to take this moment where it comes. So I've been waiting for him to kind of grab the reins a little bit more. Like, I had high expectations for him in Toronto because of what he can bring to the table and because of the fit. And it just hasn't necessarily come together how I thought it would. You know, I mean, this is a guy who should be able to do some of those things, but with the guys they have, you know, with OG taking a leap, with Fred VanVleet taking a leap, can he find his rhythm? Can he find his role? Can he find his consistent thing? Pick and roll, defense. What's it going to be night in, night out that he brings to the table? So that's what probably I'm looking for from Precious the most.
Yeah, makes sense. You mentioned that they, you know, they still have some questions in the half court. With Pascal being back, like, the obvious thing is just give him the ball more. But, like, more specifically, how do you think they solve some of the half court stuff with him back in tow?
Well, the interesting part is going to be, what do you run? How do you run it? Who do you operate it with? Is it going to be movement and try and beat everyone with a bunch of different things? Can you keep the plays for OG in place? You know, can you, what do you do late in games? Are you still running Freddie and OG together? Is it Freddie and Pascal? So it's more just finding the rhythm, because you have the tools, but can you unlock them all? Because you can make an argument. A lot of these guys can make plays with the ball in their hands, right? That fair to say?
That's fair, yeah.
But there's only one of them. So are you just going to be alternating the same actions for different guys? You know, is it going to be a Scotty Barnes post-up, then a OG post-up, then a Pascal post-up? Like, what's the sequencing going to be? That's what I would probably look forward to as this group plays more together and gels. Because if it's straight just half-court execution, they're going to have to play with tempo. They're going to have to play and move the ball. They're going to have to drive and kick, because they have that potential, because they have the unit to hurt you that way. But if it's just straight sets, it can get interesting for them.
Got you. On the OG front, because you mentioned the leap, like, what has impressed you the most about his offensive growth this year?
The mindset, the aggression. I mean, if you look at the field goal shooting, some nights it's great, sometimes it's not, but this, he's really just going after it. I mean, when he's catching, looking, jabbing, jaying from three, that's different. You know, it's not just, hey, I'm driving, hey, I'm finishing. No, he's got like, I'm going to score mindset, because I can. Now, you know, not just because, hey, you guys aren't guarding me, or hey, this is my turn. No. I give me the ball, I'm going to get a bucket. You know, even against Cleveland, he didn't hit the game winner, but he took it. He wasn't thinking twice about it. So just watching him kind of grow in that way, with that kind of aggression, I think has been fun. And I think that's kind of helped the leap be a little bit more sustainable than maybe people may have thought coming in, or maybe seeing some of the early numbers eye-popping. So, yeah, that's been the most fun part of watching OG.
Okay. One more minor Raptors question and we can move. Because you mentioned Delano Banton and the plays that he's making with the second unit. Do you have a firm opinion on Malachi Flynn and where he is as a second year guy? Because, like, he's seemingly been like the odd man out of the rotation for the most part of this year.
Spark plug. Need some scoring juice. He can come in there and help you out. Good depth piece. I'd like to see a little bit more playmaking at times, but I think it's more of a timing deal for him right now, just being kind of squeezed out a little bit. So I'm still high on him. I don't know if he's quote unquote the savior, but I think he's just got to show a consistency to stay in that rotation.
It's just I've just been surprised by this, honestly. Even going back to preseason, like as I follow a bunch of Raptors people on Twitter, like they were talking about, like, why are we just not seeing Malachi Flynn? It's just Nick Nurse just kind of experimenting, getting some guys out there, getting some run before the regular season rotation kicks off when the season starts or whatever. And like throughout the year, it's just been not much Malachi Flynn. So I just didn't know what was going on there. Like he hasn't seemed like demonstrably worse or anything in the minutes that I've seen him this year. So it's just curious. Like Banton must have really just stole the show in practices and during the summer, and like he's capitalizing right now.
I think it's just one of those things where Nick Nurse may know what he has in him and he may be looking for something else right now. Just one of those moments where he might just be falling out the rotation that way. Or maybe it's a size deal. I'm not certain, but I wouldn't tap out on him. You just got to, you know, not always look for that pull-up.
He will do that. He will definitely do that. All right, so I have – well, one, did you have another team or was that the one you really?
Oh, I want to give a quick update on the Clippers.
Okay, we can talk some Clippers.
We talked Clippers last week. Since our podcast, they have won, I believe, four straight coming into tonight. And they've had five players scoring double figures in each one of those games. And they've made 15 or more threes in three out of four. So, sorry, Reggie Jackson. I know better.
It's helpful that he's found the stroke. And I'm glad you brought the Clippers because as we, you know, throughout the like weekend when we prepare these pods, like we always dump our players in the Google Doc of who we want to talk about and who we want to highlight. And I want to put Paul George on the list again. Because like it's really hard to stress just how good he's been all year long. And he keeps doing it. And even on off nights, he's still drawing two to the ball. Like, he is still scaring defenses whenever he's curling off of a screen. He's still making the right reads and pick and roll. He's still finding the energy to defend at a high level when he locks it. Like, it's – I don't think there have been – have there been eight better players in the league than Paul George this year?
Have there been eight better players than Paul George in the league this year? That sounds like a challenge. Keep going.
Like, I – like, there are the usual suspects. Like, Giannis, despite everything in Milwaukee, just kind of being the flow start there. Like, Giannis has been there. Jokic has been there.
All right, I'm going to try. Giannis.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
Ja Morant.
Okay. Wait. Has Ja been better than the PG?
You asked, can you do it?
Okay, you get Ja, go ahead.
Steph Curry.
Okay.
What am I at, five?
Yes.
I need three more, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go Donovan Mitchell.
All right.
CJ McCollum.
Okay.
Luka.
Okay, that's eight.
DeMar DeRozan.
That's nine.
Miles Bridges.
You are trolling right now. You've been
out of bio, Joel Embiid.
Okay. Okay, so the answer seems because you threw out DeRozan, who's been really freaking good this year. I don't want to discount DeRozan, but you threw out DeRozan, you threw out Ja, you threw out Miles Bridges. I'm just gonna make the executive decision to say, like, no, you can't
Jordan Poole.
Okay, yeah, we're going off the rails very quickly here.
Russell Westbrook.
Moving on. Let's just move. I want to give a brief shout-out to the Suns, who after a wonky start, Chris Paul wasn't looking like himself, Devin Booker wasn't knocking down threes again to start of the year, DeAndre Ayton, just some murmurs about like just inconsistent effort at times. He's taking threes and he's not taking threes to whatever. Weird start for the Suns. They are rolling heading into the night. I always enjoy watching Chris Paul play basketball, but I've really enjoyed watching Chris Paul play basketball as of late. The defensive effort for him, while generally good, like it seems like it's picked up as of late. Devin Booker's fine to get, making quicker decisions with the ball in his hands. The mid-range game is his money as it normally is. I'm still enjoying watching Mikal Bridges slither across screens. It's still a shame that he does not have an all-defensive team under his belt, but hopefully after a finals berth and the Suns getting back on track, maybe the voters put him in. Quick shout out to Frank Kaminsky, who I was watching Suns Hawks earlier.
Whoa.
Here we go.
You said what now? I was paying attention, but you know when you hear something and then you're not sure?
As I was watching Suns Hawks earlier today, I wanted to give a quick shout out to Frank Kaminsky, who's knocking down shots, some flashes as a high post playmaker. You know, the defense serviceable. Do we want to call it serviceable? He's filling the gaps. You know, no Aiden, so we've seen him. We've seen JaVale McGee, who's still providing value as a rim runner. Like, they're getting it from a little bit of areas. Like, Cam Johnson still looks good, knocking down shots, active defensively. Got to a stretch in the first half of that Suns-Hawks game where he gets back-to-back steals, goes behind the back, basically goes coast-to-coast. Like, he's still making plays. The Suns are coming. I'm sure we'll do a deeper dive into Phoenix as the season goes on, because I do think they're just going to find their stride. I think this is a good basketball team. But just wanted to give them a quick shout. The team that I really want to talk about as we record on this Monday night is a team that lost tonight on the second night of a back-to-back. And it is the team that played the Raptors that you mentioned on Sunday. The Brooklyn Nets are rolling.
What is happening right now?
This role reversal is what is happening right now. You are, you know, you gave your love to OG. I am now about to praise LaMarcus Aldridge for looking decent in drop. Like, it's a whole thing now. But no, in all seriousness, could you please remove your face from the camera, sir? But no, in all seriousness, like, I've been impressed with Brooklyn's defensive effort.
You don't say.
Okay.
Interesting. Continue. I'm all ears.
You're all ears. See, this is the most fun you've had on the podcast. This is crazy. But no, like, they started off the year poorly, particularly on the defensive end. We talked about it very early on in the pod schedule. And since they gave up, I believe, 111 to Charlotte a couple of weeks ago, heading into tonight's action, they were 6-1. They had a defensive rating slightly over 98, which was a top five mark during that span. And while they haven't played like elite offense, like a bunch of elite offenses in that stretch, like, they just played Chicago and lost. But again, that's on the second night of a back-to-back. Miami ranked highly when they played them, and they defended them well. Atlanta has been not what you would expect from them offensively, but there's still a lot of offensive talent, and the effort was good in that game as well. I have been impressed with how they're switching this year. Last year, it felt very much like an automatic. I don't want to go as far as saying Kings-esque last year, because that was a whole nother level of frustration, but it was up there to where they just wanted to keep the ball in front, and it made sense. But this year, it seems to be like there's a little bit more selectivity to it. Like, you'll see a guy fight over like one of those decoy screens and stay attached instead of just automatically switching and getting into some bad matchups. I've enjoyed Bruce Brown in the lineup. Like, he's bringing it at the point of attack. DeAndre Bembry, who is the real reason I wanted to bring up Brooklyn. I'm kidding.
But that was my first note right here. Nets, there's a dash that says this is an excuse to talk about DeAndre Bembry, isn't it? Literally right here.
We've been doing the podcast too long. But no, seriously, DeAndre Bembry has been good defensively. Still a wild card at best on the offensive end. Particularly in the half court. But like, defensively, he's guarding a bunch of different dudes. And he's bringing us into everything. Joe Harris in the games that I watched today, he's bringing it. Trailing shooters over screens very well. Holding his own in isolation, holding his own on post-ups. There was a play in the Hawks game, I want to say second quarter of that game, in which the Hawks run floppy. They have DeAndre Hunter coming from the left side of the floor to the right side of the floor. You have Bogdan Bogdanovic going from the right side of the floor to the left side of the floor. Joe Harris and James Harden, they have those shooting guard those assignments of Hunter and Bogdan Bogdanovic. They switch it. Hunter comes off a screen from John Collins on the right side of the floor. Harris gets caught on the screen. So it turns into basically like a late switch. Kevin Durant jumps out on DeAndre Hunter. And then it turns into John Collins trying to post up Joe Harris. And John Collins just could not do it. Could not establish position. Joe Harris is able to swim around, front him a little bit. The ball gets thrown. He picks off the pass. I'm just like, yo, this is pretty impressive stuff. And so, like, it's just been a little bit of everybody, except James Harden, who has not been very good off ball. But beyond him, like, LaMarcus Aldridge is holding his own. Blake Griffin is holding his own.
Oh, hold on. Hold on. You said LaMarcus Aldridge is holding his own. Blake Griffin is holding his own. They're both doing pretty well in drop, eh?
They're doing – like, LaMarcus Aldridge does this thing where, like, if he's involved in the pick and roll, like, it's just a – it's an aesthetic thing. Like, I'm not even, like, trying to slander or praise either one. It's an aesthetic thing. But, like, anyway, he gets in – he gets called into the ball screen, and, like, he immediately turns at an angle. And he kind of like slides backwards at this angle. So I guess he doesn't have to like worry about hip turning very much. But like it works for him. Because what I saw a lot really over the last few years as the defense has deteriorated, as he tries to like backpedal straight back, like it just seems like it's uncomfortable for him. It's like this skip and a hop. So like just that that subtle change in his stance, like I think that helps him move a little bit. And if you get into a situation where they're like trying to ice a screen or something like that, then that just makes the decision-making a lot easier for him. And so he's looked good. Like he's doing his thing. I will give props where props are due.
Safe to say you've seen him, huh?
I have seen him. There is some film of what he's doing. Give him props.
Vindication tastes sweet, man.
Oh, goodness. So there's your Brooklyn is defending well right now take.
They are top 10 in defensive rating. How shocked are you?
Yes.
Do you know who their worst player in defensive rating is?
Oh, no.
Give you one guess.
I mean, I don't know. I'm going to guess Harden, but like.
Nick Claxton.
See, this is okay. So not only did you use like an individual defensive rating, you also mixed in some Nick Claxton slander. This is A-plus work from you.
Got to do what you got to do, bud.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I'm going to be honest with you.
How good has Kevin Durant been this year?
Also, yes. His shooting splits are always insane. They are somehow like breaking basketball right now. I don't understand how Kevin Durant is doing what he's doing. And this is fresh off of, like, even tonight, I think he had 38 points tonight or something like that on the second night of a back-to-back. In which James Harden did not seem entirely interested in driving to the basket after like the first quarter. And KD's like, all right, cool. I'm just going to sprinkle in jumpers. Like that's fine. I will attack and pick and roll, get to like the 6-7 foot range, toss in a floater or one of those like fading shots, twisting across my body. Just it's going to make it easy. Turnarounds are going to be there. I'll walk into some pull up threes. If you drop too far back, or if you're just not literally in my jersey, or even if you are, I'll just shoot over you anyway. And it's just like, I don't know what, it's cliche to say this dude's like a cheat code or he's a video game or something, but like Kevin Durant is just like, he's not anything we've seen before.
It doesn't make any sense. He makes it look easy and it doesn't matter how much you ball pressure or active against him, push him out, get the ball. I mean, this man is going left to right, one step, floater, bank shot, face up, jab, one dribble through the legs, right to a pull up. Like these great players, we often sometimes just kind of put them in the, oh, they're great category and just sprinkle in some praise for them. But like when, like he makes it look so smooth, it's crazy. Like I've caught myself almost every Nets game I've watched, at least a couple of plays are just like, wow, how? Like it's crazy.
Yeah, I just don't, just to drive home the numbers point. Okay, this does not include the game against Chicago. So those numbers aren't updated. They'll probably be even better tomorrow morning when I check. But just pulled up his the shooting splits on Basketball Reference. 81.5% inside of 3 feet. 59% from 3 to 10 feet. 55% from 10 to 16 feet. 71% from 16 feet to the three-point line. and then 38% from three. What on earth do you do with that?
I should bring this and pray. Also, LaMarcus Aldridge, I still believe, leading the league in mid-range shooting. Just throwing that out there.
Just might be.
How do you like their bench? This seems like a lineup geared towards you right now.
The bench has been... I'm down for all DeAndre Bembry minutes, so I feel like this is not the question to ask me.
No, but you got Patty Mills, Javon Carter, Bembry, Paul Millsap, and LaMarcus, and it works. Like, Mills, Carter, and Bembry, offensively, you got some question marks, but they can cause some havoc defensively. And that's like when Millsap's knees are feeling good, that's a tough lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives them a different mindset perspective. I've enjoyed watching that unit play together. Offensively, how do you feel about them?
They miss that guy. Because right now it's still a bit of a rim pressure issue for me, for Brooklyn. And I think as James Harden is continuing to find himself and can hopefully fill that void more consistently, it's still turning into a lot of, hey, KD, save us with some ISOs, with some mid-post opportunities, with some drives downhill that get to the rim, but not really. But KD's so good, it just goes in anyway. So, like, it's not a lot of forcing teams into rotation off the drive for Brooklyn. And so I worry about that from just a process standpoint. Like, obviously, when you have Kevin Durant, like, you don't need to force a rotation at the end of the day because he can just shoot over the top. But, like, just to get some more of those swing sequences so you can get more from a Joe Harris, you get more from a Patty Mills instead of just the pull-ups and stuff. Like, I would like to see them generate easier looks for their guys. So that's kind of where I'm still eyeing things. And, like, if Harden continues to feel better, if, you know, again, if Kyrie comes back at any point, like, I think that greases the wheels for you. But right now, it's a lot of jump shooting, and you knew that coming in, but it's even more so a jump shooting fest in Brooklyn.
It's the mix for me right now, tempo-wise, flow-wise, ball movement-wise, because we've seen them do it, but it's in spurts.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen them have 2 to 4 minute spurts where it's like, oh, here they come, and then they stop. And then they bog down into the ISO ball or the one pick and roll. Now the ball is not moving. Now they're trying to hope and find something at the end of the clock. So it's more, you know, that was the thing where last year it felt like they could mix that in while also just being able to just make you make tough decisions all the time. And they may not have the lineups for it right now as they're trying to find their way. But I feel like the base is a little bit off. It's a little bit different. It's not as clear cut, crystal crisp. We're going to cut you up with this and you got to deal with us and you have to deal with our talent as well. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting. I'm still not worried about James Harden. I mean, he's still doing this while not being James Harden fully.
Yeah.
So jury's going to be out there. Patty Mills has been really good for them. I still like his addition. That's been a good stuff. But yeah, they're moving in the right direction. I'll put it that way. Sometimes they just feel kind of like a boxer, like trying to warm up for the big match, and they don't necessarily have a knockout blow. So like they're still really good, but like,
yeah,
like they had Detroit on the ropes, and then all of a sudden you look up and it's a 2-point game, and it's like, wait, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Turnovers and no flow, and yeah, but yeah, this is all weird. This is the weirdest podcast we've ever done.
That it is to the flow portion of this. Like, as I was watching the end of Bulls Nets before the pod, and that went off the rails very quickly in the fourth quarter. Again, shout out to DeMar DeRozan, and also we'll get into some Bulls stuff later. But it was a lot of James Harden brings the ball up the floor. Here's a pick and roll, one dribble, don't like it. Here's a kick. If the shot's not there because he didn't really pressure the rim, it's a swing to KD, save us. And he did that until he didn't. And then Chicago hit a bunch of shots on the other end. It was just like, okay, well, this is just different. Like, Chicago's just playing out of transition or just forcing the defense to rotate. DeMar's getting to his spots pretty easily. And it's just like, it was weird to watch how easy Chicago generated good offense compared to the Nets, who in theory had the two best players on the floor. into Randall Harden, and it just looks so difficult for them. And again, like the obvious context there is like, this is Brooklyn on the second night of a back-to-back, and they're also on the road. So like, that makes sense. But that also, that kind of structural thing also isn't just limited to what we saw against Chicago. So it's something I'm going to keep an eye on.
All right, I like an eye on the prize. Let's see where else your eyes take us.
Oh, man. Okay, so for the team that I want to see a little bit more from.
Team
that makes me go, indeed. I find myself a little confused with the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Okay, what's happening right now? What is happening right now? This man praised the Nets and is now going at his Wolves.
I just want the Timberwolves to figure out their offense. And it's a little bit, and like D'Angelo Russell's missed some time, so I want to shoot a little bit of bail there. But like, it just hasn't flowed the way that I thought it would. And it's weird because it seems like towards the end of last year, after they made the Chris Finch hire and stuff, it's just like, okay, they didn't finish high in offensive rating. But like structurally, you could see some changes. You could see where Cat's getting the ball in different areas. They're using him differently. They're using him more. D'Lo comes back towards the end of the year. Like you see the outline of this three-headed attack offensively, to where it's, you know, you're getting the pick and pops from D'Angelo Russell. You're getting the rim attacks from Anthony Edwards. Cat's doing a little bit of everything. You got cutters around him. Like, okay, full offseason, this is going to make some sense. And then heading into tonight, the Wolves are 27th in offense. And I believe 10th in defense heading into tonight's action. Again, we're recording on a Monday night. And it's just like, okay, cool. The Wolves are, I thought they were going to defend better because they're playing Cat a little bit higher in pick and roll. And like they have been, but I didn't expect top 10. I was expecting, okay, maybe not bottom sixth in the lead. Maybe they move up to 20th, 19th, 20th, 21st, somewhere in there. And then you combine that with a good offense, and you have a play-in team. And right now, it's Minnesota's defending well, and the offense is bad. And it would be one thing if they were just missing shots. But, like, this is something that Chris Finch has harped on multiple times throughout the season already. There's a lack of flow. There's a lack of decisiveness. Again, like, Cat is aggressive sometimes. Other times, he's not getting the ball. Anthony Edwards is getting to the rim when he wants to, but the want to part seems to be a bit questionable right now. Like it's typical young, you know, second year player stuff. So I'm not concerned long-term, but like, as of right now, we're looking at a 3-6 ball club with offensive talent that isn't really coalescing right now. So I'm just like, where is the disconnect here with Minnesota?
So, offensively, are you concerned about the personnel of their top three guys or the personnel around their top three guys?
I think it's more so the personnel around their top three guys. Like, I think D'Lo's never going to be a high rim pressure guy. Like, that's just not him. Anthony Edwards, there's just going to have to be a mentality shift. There's going to have to be some maturation with him that just comes with experience and time. Like, that's just something you just got to wait on. But around that, it's trying to figure out who the two are going to be around him. If it's Patrick Beverley, he can space, but not much else. If it's Jaden McDaniels, he can space, but like teams aren't really scared of him yet. And it depends on what night you catch him on, how he's going to do attacking like closeouts and stuff. If it's Jared Vanderbilt, teams don't care about him. And so even if you're trying to post up Karl Anthony Towns, like not only are you sending a double to him, you can kind of rotate on the weak side in a way in which you're just not even worried about Jared Vanderbilt. So, like, that's a whole thing. It's similar with Josh Okogie. Like, he's not garnering outside attention. So, like, they're still trying to find a way to balance the offense and the defense. And, like, this is something that we talked about on the Northwest Division preview pod, in which the Wolves have intriguing pieces. I'm about to take your take verbatim, but you mentioned like they have pieces, but like trying to figure that out and trying to balance the lineups in the right way is going to be a challenge. And to this point, it has been a challenge.
I'm just concerned about their ability to generate enough around those guys lineup wise to make it work. Also, side note, I don't know what just happened this Miami-Denver game, but Marquise Morris is down.
Well, that does not seem ideal.
I hope he's all right, man.
So you have to clarify with Marquise. Like, is he down as in he got hurt, or is it down as like he got scuffle?
He elbowed Jokic, and Jokic reared up and just got him.
Oh, okay. So, all right.
Chaos erupted. Now he's sitting up. So, all right, we're good. Back to this Wolves talk. I got concerned for a second.
Okay.
What do you need to see from Anthony Edwards, or has he crossed that threshold for you to where what you needed to see has been accomplished?
I still need more consistent rim pressure from him because he can do it. Like, he's the guy that can do it, to be even more frank about it. And so, like, on one hand, it is a little bit of an unfair responsibility for him to be the only rim pressure guy that defenses care about. But also, you're so freaking good, and you're so athletically gifted in that way, and that's where your bread's going to be buttered anyway. Like, in an ideal world, obviously you want Anthony Edwards to be a good jump shooter because that rounds out everything else. But his offensive value starts with his ability to get to the rim and to do that consistently. And so, no, he hasn't crossed that threshold yet, because he's still very much of the I'll pull up for two because I want to portion of this, right? Like, even tonight, just looking at the box score, had 27 points tonight, took 22 shots, 4 of 9 from three, 7 free throw attempts. And, like, that's a mostly fine mix for him. I need to see what the shot attempts were. But it just seems I just want him to not be as jump shot heavy as he's been to start the year. I think the jumper's going to come for him. Like, I think he works hard enough for that to eventually be an asset for him. And again, he shot well from three tonight. But I don't want that to be the foundation of what he does. I want the drive to set up the pull-up. And right now it feels like the pull-up setting up the drive for him this year.
Because I think he's made a leap, but I was wondering, I kind of haven't felt, is this opportunity-based? Is this more just role-based? Is he just feeling more comfortable, natural leap type stuff? Mm-hmm. I guess part of the issue, the dynamic for me with Minnesota, and I've said it before, you have those three who are really talented, but if they don't have it going, or it takes a lot of shots for them to get it going, what do you have? And who's mm-hmm. creating? And who are they creating it for? You know, how many guys can really be high assist guys if it's going to some of the personnel? And that's not a super knock. These are all useful pieces, but they're all kind of the same together on the same team, which makes it tough, because you've made the leaps defensively. Now, offensively, you've lost some juice. So I'm wondering how they get it done. Someone's going to have to take a leap. Someone's going to have to become a shot maker, whether it's McDaniels, Vanderbilt. Someone has to be a consistent, I'm going to drive a closeout, drive a kick type deal, to balance, or else if I'm a coach, I'm sitting in the meeting saying, let's take these three away, make it as tough as you can, and let's figure it out.
Yeah, like, I think that fourth guy consistently is going to have to be Malik Beasley, just because he has the scoring chops to help him out in that regard. But even then, like, putting those four on the floor together, like, who's your fifth that kind of balances the defense in that way? Like, is that McDaniels? Is that Vanderbilt? Like, they have some stuff to figure out. Lineups wise, like, you're concerned about that heading into the year, it has been proven correct so far.
That's what I do.
It is, in fact, what you do. This is why you're here. You are the resident smart man here.
Oh, wait a minute, hold on.
I mean, what? I can't give you props now?
This is a scam, this whole pod.
No, it is not. What team is making you go right now?
Corey McGetty coming soon. Blazers. Let's check in on the Blazers. Encore Blazers. Let's talk about the Blazers real quick. I'll ask you real quick before I go. Where are you at with this team? What feeling do you have with this team?
Meh, I guess is my answer right now.
Okay. It's been a weird mix.
Yeah.
They've gotten blitzed a few times. They went 0-3 on that East Coast trip, but they also have 4 wins of 15 or more on the year. And where I'm at with it and just the vibe I'm feeling, you remember how we talked about, and this is not a direct comparison, but when we talked about Milwaukee and the things they were trying and the experimentation they were doing and how that would pay off in the playoffs, but they're obviously trying to build something that's a little bit more sustainable.
Right.
Different level, of course, but I kind of feel like that's what Portland is doing right now and trying to build something that still enhances what they have, but can sustain and grow as the season goes on. Now, the execution hasn't been where they would probably like it or where it would be noticeable. I mean, were they 5-5? But we've seen the highs, we've seen the lows. It's going to be, can they work to find the in-between and kind of become a machine? Because offensively, they're doing different things, playing them overflow, more random play, more ball screens or more down screens, more handoffs, more of those kind of things. And you see what it's doing for CJ McCollum. You see what it's done for Norman Powell here of late. Mm-hmm. You see how Anthony Simons played free. These are all positive. You see you have Nurk more engaged. These are all good things. Everyone kind of points to Dame and says, "Ooh, what's up with Dame? What's going on with Dame?" When I watched the Pacers game, I felt like he didn't shoot for the first 4 minutes. And it didn't feel like he wasn't trying to shoot, just out of the flow. They were just playing out of the flow, and they didn't need him to do that, which long-term probably helps them. So you're not just having to spam Dame pick and roll just to create anything. But can you build something that is – can you win enough to make that make sense? Can you win enough to make that have an impact? You know, that's kind of where I'm at right now. Because you can always get Dame going. And this becomes like a Toronto-ish situation where you have your team going and all of a sudden here comes Dame over the next 4 minutes in the second quarter. Like when they had Kawhi, now it's different. Or if you have to walk into a coach's meeting, I've been saying this for years, and you have to ask, what do we do with CJ? Math changes a little bit. Defensively, very mixed bag.
It's a kind way to put it.
Well, I still like the activity and the effort. They're clearly trying harder. And I've liked that they have tried different things. Like we've seen more efforts and schemes this season than we've seen in years past. That's no disrespect, but you have Dame fighting over screens and navigating and looking to stay in front, switching on to bigger guys. That's different. You have Nurk being able to drop at the level. You have some switching mixed in. You throw a zone out there. There's more in the bag. The question is, can any of it be good enough to use? So that's where I'm kind of like, I get it. Because the exploits they have jump off the page. So like they've gotten dinged many times when they're just at the level. It becomes an automatic. The defense rolls, and now they're just playing, and the rotations aren't there. Or your pick and roll defense is solid. Now you're getting beat off the dribble once you're in rotation, and now you can't contain that. So it's just kind of been like when one thing's right, the other thing's wrong, and that's kind of growing pains. But the effort is there. I mean, think about it. I believe last time I checked, they were 14th in defensive rating. Last year, they were 29th. So progress is progress.
Progress is progress. Like I want to see how it holds with them kind of being the middling defense right now. We shall see. Because even now, like they're still giving up their fair share of threes right now. And so like that has the ability to impact their rating overall. Actually on that front, how have you felt about Nasir Little this year?
I've liked the energy he's played with. I think he's exceeded my expectations as far as consistency goes. I like what he brings to the table, especially off the bench, especially when you play him with Nance and Zeller. Offensively, that can get interesting, but defensively, you got a little bit more of a base. You wonder if the shot can stick enough for him to grow, you know? But as far as making plays off the dribble, as far as showing that size and length, I've been impressed with what he's done as far as being consistent, which is important. You know, I think we talked about Simons and Little in the preseason. Simons has had that year, by the way. Not sure who said that. But I've liked what Little has done as far as just being able to contribute on a nightly basis. There's more of a consistency. You don't know if the shot's always going to fall, but you know what you're going to get effort-wise, energy-wise, and that's good for a young player to continue to grow and get those minutes and be dependent on, because they're going to need him as the season goes on.
Why is Larry Nance only averaging 18 minutes a night?
Do you want the real answer to that question? Or
I would like an answer to that question.
I think it's because they have him and Zeller, to be honest with you. I think they're kind of in the way of each other a little bit. It's very hard to not play either of them. And when you have Nurk, there's no Nance at the 5 minutes available right now. Mm-hmm. So he's got to play at the four. And it just becomes where do you fit him in? You know, because you have Covington. So which one do you want more of? It depends on what you're looking for. You probably want Covington spacing and shooting a little bit. So I think right now he's just kind of pigeonholed, which is not helping your agenda.
It is not helping my agenda at all. Like, this has just been the podcast where, like, all of my takes have just been like, hey, you know what? Actually, you're just wrong about all of this. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see. Well,
I've only been saying that for a year.
You know what? I will let you have that one. That is a genuine, fair enough.
I'm joking. Come on.
No, it's fine. I understand. I'll allow you to keep the floor since you have you've been crushing me this podcast. What players have stood out to you as of late?
Breaking news. I don't think Mike Malone or Eric Spoelstra did the coach wave at the end of that game. There's beef.
Oh, no.
Also, Jimmy Butler was screaming to take it to the back with Udonis Haslam with him. And so there's a lot going on.
Oh, the altitude has him a little upset, huh? It's kind of tough.
I got distracted again. What was your question?
What players have stood out for you?
I'm going to go Derrick Rose. Career high 45% from deep pre-recording. He's been consistent for this team. I've enjoyed what he's done. Not just the threes, but also low, still having some juice, still getting able to get in the paint, still able to finish. So salute to him. Darius Garland. Really like the steps he's taking.
Yes.
When you're shooting 44% from three, you're a little bit under 8 assists a game. So you're finding ways to continue to score, but also continue to make plays, which is very important for this Cleveland team. And double important now that Sexton's going to be out for a little bit. So I wanted to see him continue to grow, and he's taking the right steps. Just more patience in pick and roll, understanding the right speeds to take. Taking and making deep threes, so having that kind of in his bag and his element, and being able to set up plays for the 8 million bigs they have.
Yes,
I just kind of like the way that he's been controlling the tempo. So salute to Darius Garland, Jared Allen. Now I have a question for you.
Okay,
kind of spoiled it because he's one of them, but I'm gonna see if you can get the other three. Last 25 seasons, there are 4 Cleveland Cavaliers to have 3 straight games of 15 points and 15 boards. Jared Allen is one. Can you name the other three?
Okay. Last 25 years, right? Just want to make sure I have the timeline correct. Okay.
Right.
So that takes us out of like Brad Daugherty range, right?
You don't even know who Brad Daugherty is. Come on.
Oh, okay. Don't do that. Don't do me like this on the podcast. Anyway.
I gave you your lifespan.
That's a good shot. I'll give you that. Okay, so I'm going to assume Kevin Love is one.
That's correct.
Okay. No Daugherty, right?
No Brad.
Okay. All right, so Love is one.
One of these you're not going to get. One of these is going to upset you.
Okay. He's one. Like, I don't think Bron has done that. I don't think his career high is that high.
Nope, no Bron.
3 shade of 15 foot. Anderson Varejao has to be on this list.
That's very correct.
Okay. I don't think Big Z rebounded well enough to do it 3 straight times. Drew Gooden would be a hilarious add to this. I don't think he's done it either. 3 straight of 15 boards. So we got Allen. We got Varejao. Goodness, this is going to throw me for a loop, isn't it? Is this the one I'm missing? Is this the one that I'm not going to get, or is it the one that's going to make me upset?
the one you're not going to get. Love and it might and it might make you upset.
Jesus. Can you give me like a year range?
The last 25 years.
Oh, that's okay. You know what? Fair enough. Like my pride is kicking in now. Cause it's like, let me name some obscure people that got rebounds for Cleveland. And it's just, oh, this is gonna bother me. Yeah, I'm not gonna hang too long. This is bad podcast etiquette. Who's the last guy?
Cavs legend Andre Drummond.
Oh, that's sickening.
All right. But back to Jared Allen. I just want to talk about the defense here real quick, because he's becoming a little more active and he's leaning closer to switch big status than I had him before this season, which is probably everyone on Cleveland's big man rotation. But he made a couple great plays last week during that, hey, we're Cleveland, we're going to win close game stretch they had. I think it's Portland Dame comes off a screen and he's up and active at the level, which is a lot for a big. And he's protecting the three-point line. Man had his hand up while sliding his feet to contain and stay in front and still get a great contest. That's good stuff. Mm-hmm. And then against Toronto, I think OG was coming off a screen. He saw it, took the switch, again, slid his feet and contested that shot. So to have that kind of defensive versatility, to me, raises his ceiling. So he's not just a drop guy. I think he's shown he's just not a role guy. He's added to, he's added to his bag.
Ah, there it is.
Should find me every time I say it. So, yeah, salute to Jared Allen for that defense. I'm going to go George Niang.
That's a good shot.
Is there anything more surprising or anything surprising about Doc Rivers getting the most out of George Niang?
Playing him over Mike Scott. Can I make that joke?
Yeah, that's a good shot. I'll take it. I'll take it. But no, like if I'm a Utah fan, I'm mad. Like, where was this, my guy? We just needed you to do this. But no, rolling, spacing, driving, hitting shots, playing defense. He's like been Tobias-esque for moments during that stretch where he's out. He's doing a little bit of everything. He's kind of more Larry Nance Jr. than Larry Nance Jr. right now.
Okay, I don't like this. I don't like this bit at all. Oh, no.
Is it true, though? Jordan Poole, just for shooting the heck out of the ball. I think he's averaging 27 over his last three. And then a fun thing for Miles Turner. Coming into the night in the month of November, he has 13 made threes and 12 blocks. Lead leader in blocks. There you go. Little fun nugget for you.
There we go. We like it. We like it. I will move to my list. One, Nikola Jokic, which is an obvious name. Why does he not get more best player in the world talk?
I feel like we've had this discussion before because people don't appreciate his game. They think a lot of his buckets are luck.
That's such a that's disappointing. Like I'm technically media, so like I have to do more for like pushing how good he is. And so I may just do that. Like I might do a thread or an article or something very soon on Nikola Jokic. But no, Jokic has been insane. 25, 15, and 10, I believe, against Miami tonight. Just to further drive that point home. But more than what he does on offense, which you know he brings, three-level scoring, best big man passer ever. We don't have to get too deep to the defense. The defense has been good for Nikola Jokic this year. For all the we don't.
This is where you wanted to go. Okay, I like
this. This is where I want to go.
So just folks, just so you know, the hashtag is big confused for me. We have had Frank Kaminsky praise, LaMarcus Aldridge and Blake Griffin defensive praise. Nikola Jokic praise. If we get DeAndre Jordan praise in the next 2 to 3 business weeks, I'm out.
2 to 3 business weeks is quite the that's quite the right. But no, Jokic has been good. Like Nikola Jokic being a solid defender feels like the worst kept secret in the NBA over the past like 3 years. And it's worst kept because like literally anybody that watches him on defense would recognize, okay, maybe he's just not as bad as people think he is. So like it shouldn't even be that status to begin with. But no, like he's doing his usual business at the level of the screen and being active and getting deflections and getting steals. But they're also dropping him a little bit more this year. And he doesn't look bad in drop. And it's just like, sign me up for Steam versatile Nikola Jokic. I believe I heard Nuggets broadcast say like the Nuggets were second in defensive rating heading into tonight's game against the Heat. And by judging the score, I would imagine that that's going to be, their number's going to be a little bit higher or a little bit better, I guess is the better way to phrase that. But Jokic is doing his thing. Like, if he's at worst a top three offensive talent in basketball, and he's a good defender and a very good rebounder, I don't know what else we're talking about with this guy. Like, he should very much be up there with KD and Giannis in best player of the world talks right now. Period. And if you have a number one, like, that shouldn't be scoffed at because he's that freaking good. And there is my Nikola Jokic take for tonight. DeJounte Murray has been fun. Before the year, we talked about the Spurs and their offense and what that was going to look like. Who was going to be the tip of the spear with no DeMar DeRozan? It looks like DeJounte Murray is taking that mantle on. He is getting downhill with a little bit more verve. He looks even more comfortable with the pull-up. He's taking more threes and hitting them at a decent clip. So, and he's bringing the usual point of attack defense that makes ball handlers very upset to dribble against him. So I've enjoyed watching DeJounte Murray. Also, quick shout out to Keldon Johnson. He had 22 points tonight. Just want to throw him out there because I'm just a fan of his. Kyle Lowry, again, just can probably throw out this Denver game for Miami because it's just not what you wanted. But it's nice to see him be a little bit more aggressive offensively, getting into that transition pull-up three that he basically made a staple while he was in Toronto. The defense has been good. Like, teams trying to post him up, it just hasn't worked. He is battling at the point of attack when they don't switch. I've enjoyed his passing. The hit-aheads and transition have looked good, but just the entry passing has been good for him. Setting up Jimmy Butler on the block against a mismatch or just setting up Bam, the re-entries and stuff. Like, placement on entry, I really am sounding like an old man, Jesus Christ. But he has fantastic placement on the entry pass that I think deserves a little bit more credit. So he's been good. Gary Payton II, who is one of the best on-ball defenders in the league, is also bringing some juice offensively. I think that's all that needs to be said. I've enjoying the energy that he's bringing. Like, the Warriors second unit in general could just get its own section. Between him and Damian Lee, who has been very good off the bench for Golden State, and Otto Porter also looks good. It's nice to see him upright. He's knocking down pull-ups. He's shooting off move, but he's knocking down spot-ups. He's getting to the rim. He's pumping and go. Like, Golden State just deserves his own section. Like, we probably need to do like a Golden State theme pod very soon. And my last shout is Daniel Tice, who is playing with a bunch of teenagers, and he's just doing his job, setting card screens, sealing his man, crashing off into glass. He's looked solid in drop. When they've asked him to switch, he hasn't looked like a fish out of water. He's just playing competent NBA basketball for a team that is very much trying to teach its core tenets how to play basketball and the team concept. And so, like, I'm glad that he's not only feeling his job, but also doing so in a way that doesn't look like he wants to pull his hair out. So, quick shout to Daniel Tice.
And so we add to the list post-entry pass praise and another praise for a veteran big. I have turned Nekias old and musty, folks.
I am not old nor musty. Felt it was fair to give some props to these players who are doing their jobs. I have one player on the list of guys I want to see more from. Mm-hmm. As well as the Chicago Bulls have played, it would be nice, as we've seen DeMar DeRozan play well and Zach LaVine play well, despite having like 9 working fingers right now. And Lonzo play well, and Alex Caruso play well, and Javante Green fill in, and Derrick Jones Jr. fill in, and Ayo Dosunmu fill in. When is Nikola Vucevic going to start knocking out shots? And what, like, we're entering like the double digit game mark very soon. As we did the Central Division preview, I had Vuce very high on my list. I think I had Vuce second when ranking the top 10 of that division.
Sorry, it can't be worse than having Michael Porter Jr. fifth.
If we're going to go back to the very top of the show, Michael Porter Jr. also out for an indefinite amount of time because of back issues. We hope that is anything present. But anything, like, I had Vuce second on my list just because of what he does as a scorer, as a shooter, as a passer, one of the most underrated big man passers in the sport. And, like, okay in drop, I had question marks about every other defensive coverage for him. And so far this year, like, he's been fine in drop. Whenever he's had, you know, he's been with ice with Lonzo or whatever, like, he's been good at that. He's rebounded well. He has screened well. Like, the spatial awareness is there. If he's going to pick and pop, like, he's flowing into open areas, making himself available. He's doing all this stuff. He just can't hit anything. And, like, at a certain point, he has to do that. Because once he does that, Chicago's really, they're off to a hot start already. Like, they're really going to take off if Vooch knocks down shots. He just has to do that. Like, that's all I got. That's honestly all I have. I just want Vooch to knock down shots. He's too
weird,
good.
It's been a weird dynamic because all the pieces they added has just really helped the Vucevic-Levine two-man game just pop while Vucevic is not shooting well. So you have a scenario where you're shooting, I think, 38% from the field, 25 from three, but also has like a career high assist. Yeah. still a double-double. So it's, I think to your point, once he actually is able to hit some of these looks, then it becomes different. But also I wonder, like, I want to dive deeper and see how much of that is just a dynamic of the looks he's getting and how much they're just using him to open things up. But yeah, it'd be nice for him to knock some shots down. Speaking of knock some shots down, I got two for you.
Okay.
One, Lonnie Walker. Lonnie Walker the fourth, right?
That is he.
This is year four. It's time to make a move. This is a team needs offense. There's opportunity there. The numbers look almost the same as last year. What's your thing, my guy? Score, defender, shooter. Got to put your stamp on one of them. It's time. And then Sadiq Bey. I love Sadiq Bey, but Sadiq Trey has gone missing.
I'm curious. Like, you are the resident Sadiq Bey guy on the pod. So I didn't expect this to be a thing. But
I would like to just see more of an evolution. You know, I think year one was pretty good. Year two, he's got more of an opportunity. He's more aggressive offensively. Obviously, the threes aren't falling, which doesn't help. You go from 38% to 28%. That's not ideal. The other thing is, what's the next evolution for him? So the rebounding has been good. His assists are up, but are we driving? Are we initiating contact? Are we able to create our own looks? When the ball swings to us, can we beat a closeout? Is it just going to be threes? That's what I'm looking for. I mean, he has, I think, 8 games of double-digit field goal attempts and 0 games with 5 or more free throw attempts. Just want to see some evolution.
Okay, I will give you that. How? Actually, no, I'm gonna save that one as we move into our free throw segment. I will kick this off. I don't have very many, mostly because this is, you shine on the podcast, period. But this is really the area in which you shine and also frustrate me at the same time because you come up with questions that just aren't fair to me or my narratives or my general likes within the NBA. But anyway, my first question. How concerned are you with the Hawks?
I'm not. It's not ideal. Like, they have definitely taken a step backwards, but this is something they need to kind of go through. Just as a young team that caught some success, and now you go from, again, the hunter to the hunted. You know, teams are more ready for you. So now you've got to be more prepared night in, night out. And you have to generate that run. If you look at it, they've lost 5 of their last 6, but they lost to Washington, Philly, Brooklyn, Utah, Phoenix. Now, can you pick it up and compete and finish off this West Coast road trip strong? Or is this going to be kind of you falling back to where you were early last year, if that makes sense? Where now we're asking questions, can they compete? Is the defense there? What do they do offensively? So I think it's just getting back to their base and bringing it every night. I think defensively has been the quiet part where they've taken a step back. You know, it's very easy to look at the offense and wonder what's going on, but I think defensively they've got to reinvest and get re-energized because this is part of success. Your success is going to take a shot at you. So they're going to have to step up to the plate and realize, hey, that playoff run was great, but now we have to reestablish ourselves. In a conference full of teams that are going out and getting it. You know, if you look at, you don't think Washington's confident right now? You don't think Charlotte is looking and saying, oh, wait, what happened? Mm-hmm. you know, Toronto's coming. You still have Milwaukee and Brooklyn just kind of figuring things out. Chicago's made a step, so it's got to hurry up.
Sheesh. All right. We shall see. Who's been better this year, Paul George or Jimmy Butler?
Ooh, that's a good question. That is a good question. I'm going Jimmy.
Okay. Better at the point of attack this year, Gary Payton II or Marcus Smart?
I'm still going Marcus Smart.
Better season so far, Jason Tatum or Miles Bridges?
This is a trap.
Is it a trap?
Miles Bridges has produced more this season.
Oh, this is not you going into semantics. Boo. How you feel about Dallas right now?
How do you feel about Dallas right now?
Luka's good.
I'm kidding around.
Boo.
I like what Jalen Brunson has done. And I like that they've kind of figured some things out. They're winning some close games. Do you want to be in tight battles with San Antonio and Boston? Probably not. But you get Porzingis back. You got Luka going a little bit. It's just who's next? It's like you got Luka. You're trying to figure out what to do with KP. Tim Hardaway Jr. is aggressive, and Jalen Brunson's playing well. What's after that? And can you defend consistently? But 7-3, I mean, you're producing.
Higher confidence level in turning things around, the Bucks or the Lakers?
That's a really good question because I'm confident in both of them. I think I would probably go with the Bucks just because their guys have been out and they've kind of found some things and know more about their overall team. So once they can get right and get healthy, they should be able to kind of just take off. Side note, are we going to talk about Giannis making these jump shots or are we just going to keep waiting?
We can keep waiting for now.
All right.
Higher chance of staying in the top six in the conference, Washington or Cleveland?
I want to say Cleveland, but that injury. I'm going to go Washington. But Cleveland learning how to win some close games and not really having teams find an exploit for what they're trying to do with all these bigs. Like, I mean, you know, you just start Dean Wade, like, and it works.
De'Aaron Fox or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander?
De'Aaron Fox.
All right. I am good to go.
It's close, though. I think Shai just gets hurt because he's with the Thunder. I'll probably reevaluate that one.
Okay. We don't want you to get yelled at from our Thunder base. Shai's better, by the way. But anyway, you can continue.
Yeah, I know. You said Shai was better than Mike Conley and should have been an all-star last year. I'm very well aware on your position.
He's a really good basketball player. That's all I'm saying.
Start, bench, or cut. Brandon Ingram, Jason Tatum, or Jimmy Butler.
You are going to Shai. Absolutely not, man. I don't want to see that graphic ever again.
That's your answer?
Correct. I will say before we move on, like, New Orleans is a dumpster fire for multiple reasons right now. Brandon Ingram's been pretty good this year. Like, I do want to at least acknowledge that. Like, he's been good
before he got hurt. Like I said, he's evolving into what everyone's wanted him to be, but no one's paying attention to it. All right, got another question for you.
Okay.
You have the Wizards and the Chicago Bulls both in the top six for defensive rating. How do you feel?
Confused.
That's fair. Power rank these guards.
Okay, let me pull up the old notes app here. What we got?
CJ McCollum.
CJ McCollum, all right.
DeJounte Murray.
Okay.
Fred VanVleet.
So we got CJ, DeJounte, we got Fred VanVleet.
LaMelo Ball.
Okay, I don't like this already. Go ahead.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
I tried to throw that in there, huh? Okay. So these are the five, or did you have another name?
Nope, those are five.
Okie dokie. All right, so I will say, this is going to be good. All right. DeJounte's last for me, and then it gets interesting. I guess DeJounte, Fred, CJ. Actually, wait a minute. This is a really good question. Just based on this year, or like who I'd rather have, or like what is the
no additional criteria.
No additional criteria. Just those five names.
Right. Yeah, requested that. You gotta figure it out.
Well, I don't like this at all. Okay, well, I'm going to take this as who's been the top five this year. This is so good. Okay. I'll go, if it's just this year, I guess CJ LaMelo, Fred, Shea, DeJounte.
All right, that's fair. More fun, San Antonio or Orlando?
This is good. Orlando.
Okay.
A lot of Cole Anthony.
Tyrese Maxey or Nikhil Alexander Walker?
Whoever shoots the least. Now, I guess it's Maxey for now.
Okay. More surprising, Grayson Allen being number four in three-pointers made per game or Cole Anthony being number five?
I think it's Grayson Allen by default. Because, like, Cole was going to take enough to be up there regardless. Grayson having to play this much is, again, part of the issue of Milwaukee is where they're at right now. But, yeah, I'll go Grayson Allen.
Who are you more concerned about right now? The New York Knicks or the Denver Nuggets?
More concerned? I'm not super concerned about it. Like, I guess the Knicks would be my answer. You're just trying to get me yelled at by the Knicks fan base, I feel like.
Duh. Why is the West, like, seemingly more competitive but feels less fun?
Because, like, the standings are weird. It's less fun. Like the Lakers are without LeBron. And then, like, beyond that, I mean, the Clippers are obviously without Kawhi. I guess the regulars are just kind of weird right now. Like, Utah's been really good, but, like, Hassan Whiteside's closed out a game over Rudy Gobert. He's closed out a couple now, which is interesting, on top of, like, Donovan Mitchell taking half of this early season stretch to knock down shots. And that's been weird. Like, Conley's missed some time, so that's also been weird. And, like, Phoenix had the weird start. And then, like, Ja's done things, but, like, everyone else has been kind of weird. And then it's Denver, but, like, MPJ's out. And it's just – that's why. Because there's a but with literally everyone except Golden State.
How does Denver keep doing this every year?
Nikola Jokic has a strong case for the best player in the world. It's Michael Malone. I guess we can call him Mike now. Michael Malone is one of the best coaches in basketball.
And go ahead and call him Mike if you want, bud.
Yeah, I'm not trying to have those issues at all. But yeah, when you have at worst a top three player and you have like a top six coach, top seven, we're going to have to do like coach rankings at some point. Because it's a deep list this year. But yeah, when you have that and you have pieces around Jokic because he lifts everyone, they can do what they do.
Do you want Warriors Jazz in the conference finals?
I'll take it, yeah.
You believe in Chicago or Dallas more?
Chicago.
Power rank these wings.
Okay.
Tim Hardaway Jr.
Oh, this is already about to make me mad. We're starting this off with Tim Hardaway. Okay, go ahead.
Will Burton.
Okay.
Jeremy Grant.
Who's been not very good this year. Go ahead.
Keldon Johnson.
Okay.
Gary Trent Jr.
Oh, I hate all of this. Okay, so I'll probably have Barton one. This year, Barton, Trent, Hardaway Jr., Grant Keldon, I think would be my five.
All right. Why did Kareem Abdul-Jabbar do that to that man?
I'm not doing this. Did you have another one?
You don't think Darren Williams can fight?
I'm not doing this with you either. Oh, Jesus. That's just the most random thing. Also, you know what made me mad about that? Like, I can't remember which account it was. It might have been Bleacher. I don't know. Whoever the account was that tweeted about this, they had Darren Williams in the Cavs jersey. And I'm just like, why would you even do that? This is incredibly petty. Like, if you're going to bring up retired Darren Williams, at least give him the Jazz jersey. Like, give him the Nets jersey. Don't give him the Cleveland jersey. Like, y'all are playing. Come on, bro.
Next week, we're going to power rank the Darren Williamses.
Oh, God. I feel like that's pretty straightforward in terms of who he plays for.
It gets tricky. Shout out to D. Will. Let's see. I'm almost done here. Don't you worry, folks. More terrifying. Jimmy Butler yelling at you to come see me in the back, or Udonis Haslem saying, don't worry about it, I got him.
Yes.
Okay. Is it true you need approval from Heat Twitter to cover any further Heat games?
At this point, I guess it is. I am now 0-2 in the building officially because I went to Heat Lakers in 2019. They ended up being the finals. But anyway, I went to Heat Lakers in 2019 and the Lakers won that one in a nail biter. And I was in the house for Heat Celtics on last Thursday. And that was a not so fun game. So I guess that's probably fair.
Is OG Anunoby the next Chris Middleton?
Wow. Not at all where I thought that was going. He has to become a much better mid-range shooter before I can go there.
Brandon Clark scored 20 points tonight. Good for him.
Oh, that's the whole thing. One of the agendas has to live.
How good is John Morant? Is he in your MVP race?
I'm sure if I make the list, like, he's somewhere in there. Like, I don't think he's in, like, my top three or anything. Like, I don't think he's a serious candidate right now. Top six somewhere? Like, I have to sit and think.
Top six?
Again, I have to, like, make the list. Actually, I have a question for you. Who's been better this year, Steph or Ja?
Ooh, that's tough. Steph's the answer, but Ja's been really good. Okay. Ja's been really good. Oh, Kendrick Perkins. I think he's making a most improved player case for Ja Morant. So maybe you guys are still aligned.
Well, I mean, now it can't be. Like, I have to further lean into it. Like, OG was my pick anyway, but I have to be more firm on that take now.
Oh, actually, you know what? Now, Paul George has been dominated in all fashions. That was Kendrick Perkins. So you guys are aligned there, too. See what else I can get real quick.
I don't like this.
He likes Kevin Durant.
You also like Kevin Durant?
He said something about the Eagles.
Surely not. I'm not about to go to his timeline to check, so I'm just going to assume that you're lying about this.
I lied about that one. That's true.
Okay.
Oh, he likes the Cavs too. This is great. This might be a new segment for me.
Let's not make this a new segment. Did you have another one, good sir?
No.
Okay. Well, before you get deeper into the rabbit hole of Kendrick Perkins tweets, thank you.
Gary Payton too, love.
Yeah. All right. That's enough.
Are you the next Kendrick Perkins?
And that is where we cut the I am the next Giannis Antetokounmpo. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NakaiasNBA, probably getting yelled at. You can find Steve Jones Jr. on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all on Friday.
Doc Rivers is the coach of the year. Also, I think this man is Perk is mad at Kent Bazemore.